When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
And we are recording. This is James Whelan, Managing Director of Barclay Pearce Capital's Wealth Management Team, live, not really live, but recorded from Studio 3 in the Barclay Pearce Capital Sydney's offices. This is the Theory of Thing Investment Podcast. Today's date is the 12th of April, 2024 AD. I am joined by special guest David Sokolsky, who is the Chief Investment Officer of Carrara Capital, and these glasses are not real. These are just screen glare glasses sponsored by BlackRock, who are the provider of some of the SMAs that we use on our platform. Do you want to open an account?
They look good on you.
No, yeah, they do look good. So how's it going? Thanks for joining us, mate. You well?
Yeah, been very well. Yeah. Very busy at the moment. It's a really interesting time in markets. So, things are going great. A lot of opportunities out there, but also a lot of risks. So I think it's really important people are managing their money pretty closely at the moment.
Well, let's start with the opportunities, obviously, and see how we go. I'm just going to move some stuff around here while we do. Thank you. Got to do that. So, yeah, where are the opportunities at the moment?
Look, I think the two biggest things that we see at the moment are really in the Asian markets, and in particular Hong Kong, with the valuations and with the upside there that we see.
Yeah.
And the commodity space, which we think is really at the very early stages of a potential uptick. Which
did you say super cycle?
Look, you know,
let's say
there's certainly a growing supply demand imbalance with a lot of key commodities out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think from that perspective, we've got a long way to go before, you know, a lot of that gets priced in. Some of the companies already started moving, but some of the actual commodities, I think, are just at the really early stages.
I mean, you want to talk about copper? We've spoken about copper offline a little bit. I've just got a little chart that was up here before. Let's see if I can yank it up. We are not absent of Heath Moss, who would usually be joining us. Wow, that's just shocking. Heath is in Melbourne at the moment and enjoying the beautiful Melbourne weather down there. Look, that's a chart of copper. That's about the best I can do without actually bringing up the app. You can see that since I started saying that copper is going to set for a run, I don't want to get too accurate, but it was about at the lows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, you know, in the story for copper has probably been strong for a little while now, just on its industrial use. The problem's always been the negative rhetoric around China.
Yeah.
And copper in China has historically been very well correlated.
Yep.
And it wasn't until we saw some of that sort of rhetoric loosen up, and it still hasn't turned that positive yet. But once that turned around to some degree and we saw the data come through, and, you know, the fear that was put through the Western media about how China was going to blow up the property sector.
It was so overbaked. Exactly. So overbaked, wasn't it?
And once that went, then people started focusing on the copper, the fundamentals,
yep.
Which are very strong, and then it started to rally. So, you know, we jumped in a little bit later than you.
just because I predicted it. It's funny, in my role, I have very little to do with the actual movement of money now. It's just really just sort of picking things out. And just
yeah.
So you actually have to, you're on the edge, mate.
And put the money to work, yeah. And you know, we didn't pick the exact bottom, but we certainly think there's a lot of demand sort of pent up there. And
yeah,
if the electrification of everything goes forward, you'd have to think that's going to be very strong for things like copper and silver.
Yeah, silver going too. Yeah,
silver looks, you know, fantastic from a supply demand perspective.
Yep.
And just the need for it, you know. So whether it's solar panels for copper or EVs, solar panels for silver or copper. But EVs, that whole process is really at the early stages.
You think so? With the
Yeah, we haven't even started yet. But the thing is with solar panels, the production of solar is really dominated by China.
Yeah.
And it will depend on the US relationship with China as to see how sort of Chinese solar production will help the West and what that means.
Mm.
And that still is yet very unclear.
Yeah.
And that's also assuming there's no technology changes over the next sort of couple of years that, solar may not be the best form that people are looking at for residential housing.
I've never really felt the offset that I've got in silver because they use less of it and less of it, the more advanced the technology and solar panels gets. However, more solar panels get made, it sort of offsets itself about how much is actually getting used, more or less. But gee, the place, and I remember seeing a satellite image of the place where the solar panel, most of the solar panels in China are made.
Yeah.
And the huge coal factory that they've got sitting right next to it to be able to. Oh. it's the filthiest industry in the world.
It's a that's why no one else makes them. And everyone thinks that buying a solar panel is, you know, going to help the environment. It's like the production of them with the silicon and everything that goes through is highly polluted.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. I think, you know, you've got that for silver, but you've also got, you know, that's a trading commodity, which is a lot. If you look at what's happening to gold, if you're having a look, gold miners, silver and gold miners are really lagging the gold price quite dramatically. And if historical relationships hold, then I think just from a trading perspective, there's a lot of potential upside there as well.
Okay. And now gold has had a substantial run. Funnily enough, the original run was not only based on what's going on in the Middle East, but also a big chunk of it on dropping yields. And now after we've seen these CPI prints sort of that have come down, that disinflation isn't happening as quickly as everyone was potentially hoping or factoring in. Yeah. Definitely not priced in at the beginning of the year. Gold still continues.
Yeah, well, gold's not, I think, pricing as an inflation hedge at the moment. I think it's pricing as a US dollar hedge. So you've got some really interesting things happening in the market. If you have a look at gold and when it really took off, it was actually in the Russian invasion of Ukraine.
Yep.
It was really the turning point. So that's when you had central banks starting to buy gold up en masse. And that's been the key driver thus far. The thing with gold at the moment with the US environment is you've got a situation where there is no real way that Powell should be cutting rates anytime soon, given the pure data that we see. Now, for him to come out in November and say, you know, the dovish pivot, as we call it, and we're going to start cutting rates.
Yeah.
You know, we're now, what, almost six months past that. We haven't seen any rate cuts. The data suggests that we won't see any anytime soon.
It's possible we don't see any this year.
Very possible.
Yeah. And so everyone laughed at Neil Kashkari when he said that a little while ago. And now, hello. Here we are. Yeah.
And the really interesting thing on that, and I think everyone knows that, but what a lot of people probably aren't paying attention to is, yeah, we're starting to see it through the media a little bit, but the US debt is obviously out of control.
Yeah.
The interest repayments on debt is expected to be higher than the net revenues coming through in the US system.
Yeah. I just heard today it's gone through a trillion, the interest payments?
Yeah, it's 1.2 trillion.
I just saw that announced.
It's expected to be, Bank of America come out and said it's expected to be 1.6 trillion by the end of the year.
Well, that's fine.
So what you have there is a deficiency of US dollars in the system.
Yeah.
Which means that you actually have demand for US dollars, US dollar going up, US interest rates going up.
Yeah. There's a dollar chart there too, just so that
So they're trying to fight against that pretty hard.
Yeah.
And the really amazing thing that's happened is that for the first time, really, you've seen the Treasury Secretary, say Yellen, actually fund the deficits at the short end instead of the long end.
Okay, go. Yeah.
So she's not funding
it. Map that out to me, because that's a little bit past my understanding of
things. So she's not funding it with 10-year bonds anymore. So when you go out and you say, what are we going to sell to fund this debt?
Yeah.
They're not funding it with 10-year bonds. They're funding it at the short end of the curve, which is higher.
Yep.
So she's consciously,
been inverted for about
so she's
2 years,
consciously yeah. going out and funding the debt at a higher interest rate than what she could do at the 10-year level.
Why is it?
Well, it can only mean one thing, and that's that they expect near-term rates to come down.
Okay.
Right? Now, why would near-term rates come down when you've got the fundamental backdrop that we have in the data coming through?
Yeah, and if there's a few things that I know. The two-year, just to explain, the two-year is the one that closely matches the short-term interest rate movements. So just so everyone knows.
So
I know one thing. Thanks, Marty Wetton, for filling me in on that all those years ago. Yeah, go on.
So it's almost like Yellen is trying to force Powell to cut. So it's like the Treasury is trying to force the Fed into cutting rates.
Saying we're going to keep selling this stuff at the short end. You need to actually start.
You need to come to the party as well and start selling.
Is it? Now, have any? Sorry, I'll stop cutting you off.
That's all right. Yeah. Sorry, I've got a habit of just keep talking.
No, just keep yapping away. You're okay. I'm just going to sit here and just.
That's when things are unscripted. It just keeps coming out.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, the other thing is on the 10-year, you know, there could just be a lack of demand for 10-year US bonds, where we've seen China and Japan step out of the market.
Yeah.
And, you know, Janet Yellen was just in China, and I suspect a lot of what they were saying was, hey, how about you come and buy 10-year bonds again, and we might ease off on the rhetoric about trade. So there might be a little bit on there in terms of we'll ease off if you keep buying our bonds because we need someone to finance the debt.
It's a bit funny, isn't it?
Because what happens is who's been financing the 10 years at the moment, keeping the market there, is US money market funds. So they've stepped into that market, which has been very positive for the US economy.
Yeah.
But if you start dropping rates at the interest rate level at the short end, the money market funds are going to be offering a lower rate, which lowers their demand, which lowers their appetite for 10-year bonds as well.
Yeah.
So all this is interwoven in a really complex sort of funding and capital allocation model from the Treasury and the Fed. And I think when you look at that, what you've got is there's a lot of pressure for the US to cut rates, but they need to still fund their debt. They need to mend their relationship with China in order to do that. And at the same time, that funding at the short end instead of the long end is inherently inflationary.
Yep.
So you're putting pressure on inflation when at the same time you're trying to cut rates. So the US, in very simple terms, is an absolute mess at the moment.
Yeah. There's a lot of things that are pushing and pulling in different directions. So they're showing that all the warning signs. What is it? There's green shoots and red lights that are sort of all flashing at the same time.
Yeah.
The economy is strong.
And so come back to the original conversation that we started with. And sorry, that was a very long-winded way of saying.
That's all right. We've got time to go.
I would rather hold gold in that environment.
Okay. That's where you get into. I forgot we're talking about that.
Yeah. So I think gold's had a couple of drivers, but it's not necessarily an inflationary hedge at the moment. And historically, it hasn't been. It's just been a correlation with real rates. That's what it really reacts to, not necessarily inflation.
Yeah, and now we're seeing that there's a huge divergence between rates and the gold price.
Yeah.
Let's just see. I actually had that up here a second ago. Let's see if I could find that one. I've got that from
So Garrett. I think there's an increasing skepticism about the viability of the US economy as it still holds. When you've got either Biden or Trump, when they get in, neither of them seems like they're going to cut spending to any great degree.
No.
And they probably can't when you have a look at where their spending goes in terms of defense, healthcare, and age services and things like that.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, if you want a trading tip out of that one, I do believe that Boeing is an absolute screaming buy. As if it seems like it's going to be obvious that Trump gets in and we have factored him in as winning, we've almost completely priced that in for our house,
right?
Just our house discussions. Boeing is an absolute screaming buy, just on the defense spending.
Yeah, and look,
and it'll be cheap.
They've got no choice.
Yeah,
because anything to do with defense spending or steel in the US is probably underfunded at the moment. And yeah, the US has effectively been funding the Ukrainians and the Israelis. It's got to be questionable how much weaponry they actually have left, and either way, they will have to rebuild stocks quite dramatically. Particularly if anything happened, say in the South China Sea or with Taiwan, which I don't think will happen, but certainly for the US's benefit to defend themselves in the future, they're going to have to spend massively, and that requires a lot of steel.
Yep, I could see that. Okay, so we've got trades on steel, we've got trades on Boeing, potentially we could have long gold, long copper. Where are your shorts?
We run a global hedge fund, so we're long and short through both physical positions and through option strategies and futures. We're pretty well hedged across a lot of the equity markets globally.
Mm-hmm.
And we're long the commodity base and we're short US equities via a whole lot of relatively complex strategies. But
Is that hurting? I've got to ask a question.
Right? Well, we've got them via options. So
okay.
We're burning through premium, if you like.
Yeah, limited risk.
Yeah, exactly. And you'll know what we did, what's called a put spread.
Yep.
So we actually can get out of the short leg at a pretty reasonable profit and we let the long leg run. So, it is.
Don't try it. Not for amateurs, kids. It's actually not that complex, but it's okay. Yeah.
No, well, I should say, don't do it. I think when you look at that, it really depends on how you implement short ideas. For most people, shorting is really hard, dangerous, and shouldn't be done.
Shouldn't be done.
No,
definitely not the US market.
Yeah, so that's the beauty of what we can do.
Yeah.
And I think when you look at that, if you do it the right way, there is potential there. So, we sort of look at that and, we've got a lot of what we would call fairly natural hedges. So, for instance, if all that comes off, then, we would expect gold to rally pretty hard and if the US dollar does rally, we'd expect the euro to come down. So we're short the euro in the futures. And if US dollar does, if US dollar does come down, then our commodity base rallies. So we're trying to sort of play a fair few different games at the same time.
That's sort of the point of what you do. And I just see the entire thing from the high end, make sure that you're not too correlated.
Yeah, exactly. And that's I mean, that's the beauty of what you got to do. We probably run maybe 70 or 80 positions across our portfolio. And some of them are pure optionality. Some of them are correlated. Some of them are uncorrelated. Some of them are a mixture of all of that. So for us, we've got to be thinking about what happens if US equities continue to rally. You know, do we make money? What happens if commodities fall? How do we hedge some of that risk out? And you know, we've got a fairly decent allocation of H shares in Hong Kong, which are very volatile at the moment. Which have performed exceptionally well last 2 months, but in January they got hammered. So again, managing that volatility around positions is really key to what we do.
It sure would be. I'm just sort of thinking through the other thing. Now we talked about the US dollar. I think that one of the easiest, he says it's in the Chris Joy way of looking back on how easy these calls were, I think that long US versus the Aussie, I think there's more of that to go, potentially, just on an interest rate differential. I think that our local rates drop, and I still stand by this. I think that when they start to have to cut, and I mean have to cut, I think that they're going to come off quite significantly.
I don't disagree with that. I just think we're a long way off cutting anytime soon. we run our government and central bank run an economy based on housing.
They
should never forget that. So there is no way we'd have an immigration policy like we do unless you purely run your economy on housing.
Yeah.
And so they won't cut rates unless we officially go into recession. This is just my opinion, obviously.
And I'm about to Gareth Aird from the chief economist, the head of Aussie economics at the CBA just dropped his note this morning. Right. So we're going to have a couple of opinions here.
They won't cut rates unless we have an official recession, or unless we see housing prices come down significantly.
And significant would have to be a significant amount because they've gone up so dramatically.
And you've got to remember, like, the average consumer in Australia is very weak. You know, we're in a per capita recession.
Tell me about it.
And people are funding their lifestyles through equity in their homes. And the only way you can continue to fund that and fund consumption is if the home value keeps going up.
I feel so seen.
And the government know that.
Two thumbs. Okay. That is true. All right. Well, I've got Gareth's note here, and it dropped. And I do believe that this is something anyone can subscribe to. But he was commenting, I won't go directly on the quoting of it. A report released by the IMF, International Monetary Fund, on the 8th of April 2024 supports our view. And the view is that the transmission of monetary policy in Australia to the household sector, and by extension the broader economy, is much more direct and potent than in most other major jurisdictions, particularly when compared to the US. He believes that this report from the IMF, Australia sits at the top of the global table in terms of the strongest transmission of monetary policy based on a combined scorecard of the mortgage structure, level of household debt, loan to value limits, and housing supply constraints. He knows what I like to see, and if you want to talk about feeling seen, I'm about to put it up on here. It is the outstanding mortgage rates chart, and keep that away from children because that's a scary looking chart there. Again, the increase since the rate hikes began in the mortgage rate, just to see exactly how much we are copping it over here. And he's got more charts that were in there. I didn't want to steal all of his stuff out of there. If you want to know more, you got to subscribe to Gareth Aird and the CBA. Big plug for the CBA over there and the economics team. They do amazing work.
Yeah, they do good work.
Yeah. Gareth is the guy. I love, you know why I like that Gareth's the guy? First off, he's very easy to talk to.
Yeah.
Calm, relaxed, explains stuff really well. But also he gets it from a personal view. See a lot of economists that just have obviously no idea what the actual individuals are going through.
Yeah.
He feels it.
Yeah.
He feels it too. Doesn't change his view necessarily. And you do see a lot of people talking their own book in a senior economics role. But also the data that
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
TBA gets is as fresh as you could possibly get. Yeah. It's straight out of their own terminals.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And I think the the interesting thing about that is the second derivative of that chart and what was said there is, do we really want to be the most responsive economy to monetary policy changes? And I would argue that's not a great thing to be, because now you sit there and go, well, why is that the case? And it's the case because the absolute vast majority of our lending is variable for home loans.
Yep.
That's it. So other countries actually lend to industries. They lend to manufacturing. They lend to build businesses and be more productive and build an economy.
Okay.
We don't.
Yeah.
We just lend to home loans.
We just lend to just chumps like me.
Yeah.
Too much.
So we lend
don't tell the bank.
We lend too much and we only lend it to one asset.
Yeah.
So then we sit there and we see a chart like that and everyone goes, oh, wow. You know, so we can't cut rates, can we? Because we're so dependent on them. It's like, but let's have a look at why we are there. The structured lending in Australia is completely misplaced. Our incentive as an economy to grow is completely misplaced.
Mm.
Yeah, people generally don't want to be productive. They just want to earn enough money to pay off their mortgage, go on holidays once a year, and they're happy.
That's pretty much it. That's the dream.
That's it.
As long as you have a home.
Yeah.
If you have a home and you have a job, you're okay to go.
Instead of people go out and start a business, you know, that's really hard.
Tried that.
You know, I'd rather work, not me, obviously, because that's what I've done, but people go, I'd rather go and work for the government. I'd rather go into a job that just pays me a guaranteed salary.
Yeah.
Where I just know I'm safe.
Yeah.
And so our economy is and no disrespect to anyone in that situation, because that's a valid reason, valid incentive, but most people just want to be safe.
Yeah.
You know? We don't have the levels of innovation that you see in Asia. We certainly don't see the levels of innovation you see in the US.
Mm.
Where you're seeing a lot of the new technologies come through. That's where you're seeing, you know, a lot of the shift from, say, traditional industry to electrifications, Internet of Things, everything we see that's happening in the world, very few of it's happening in Australia. I think that's something that the government and society needs to deal with.
It is funny the way that we've sort of gone backwards on that. We still consider ourselves that innovative tech edge country. We were the country, the Wi-Fi nation. What happened to those guys? I know it sounds like a couple of old men at the pub who are talking about the days as they used to be. All right, moving on. So what else?
But it's not too late, because
I mean,
the beauty of what we have is an amazing education system.
Yeah.
We actually have a really smart, a smart population.
We are the leaders.
And our immigration policy, as bad as I think it is generally bringing smarter people into the country, which means that the kids are growing up here and everyone else is generally getting smarter and smarter.
Mm-hmm.
But we need a government and a policy set up that is willing to reward that and build on it, not just rely on housing going up for our economy.
I can't stand that. I think that, and a lot of people sort of come into that conclusion as well. Something does turn. I'm sure that something does turn eventually with that. And I think that it involves the voting population, the demographics of the voting population, i.e., my parents need to die, and I hope that's a long time away. But that you can sort of see that that those people that are born in that generation need to not be voting anymore.
Yeah.
And then it's sort of everything changes about exactly what our priorities are going to be.
Yeah.
And they'll probably turn to something stupid as well. Yeah. That'd be good.
Yeah. I hope your parents are alive for a long time.
Me too. I really like them. And g'day if you're watching as well. I hope you're still alive. Paul Krugman. We'll try and wrap this up now. We can go and get some lunch or something. Paul Krugman, what does he do anyway? What's his thing?
No, he used to be a very, very good economist.
What happened?
Started believing it.
He started drinking his own cooler. If you thought that Chris Joy might have a tendency to be a bit like that, Paul Krugman blows him out of the water here. And I'm going to share this one. So he tweeted something back in 2023. The war on inflation is over. We won at very little cost. And there's a chart that I've just posted here just talking about how he's taken CPI. This is back in 23. He's taken CPI, ex food, energy, shelter, and used cars out of it. How many things can you exclude from it? I'd love to be able to report the ASX 200. Just taking stocks that I don't like out of it. Wouldn't it be great? Yeah. How's my portfolio? It's fantastic. I took these big stocks out of it.
As a fund, that would be fantastic.
Just pick and choose. Yeah. How many things can you exclude before you start to go, okay, look, it's silly. Because if people take energy out of a CPI data or out of an inflation print, but energy is actually, okay, so you go, okay, because they can't control that. You can't control the price of oil.
Yeah.
But it still impacts. How many things can you take out before you start? Just what's the point of this data?
And that's exactly right. I think we've reached a point where official CPI data is meaningless if you're actually going to measure the price increase that the vast majority of people are feeling.
Yeah.
And what you have is, you know, central banks running monetary policy according to, you know, really whatever they want. Like, I want to strip this out. I want to reweight my basket. I want to, you know, I want to have core CPI, but now I want to have core CPI ex housing.
Mm.
You know, it just gets to a stage where you've actually got to look at the minutiae of the detail of a CPI release to work out what's actually going on.
Mm.
You know, sometimes you might find it's alcohol and tobacco, which is driving a CPI result, which, you know, doesn't impact that many people. Sorry, alcohol probably does, tobacco probably doesn't.
Yeah, it would have used to.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's a shift of the demographics.
Yeah, yeah. And so we had holiday and travel being a really big driver of CPI back in 2023.
Yep. COVID release, everyone going on holiday.
A lot of people who went on holiday.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of Australians who can't afford a holiday.
Tell me about it.
And this is something where I think running CPI on all these different metrics doesn't actually relate to what the average person is feeling.
Yep.
And what they're seeing. The obvious question there is, well, what's the solution to that? I don't know what the solution is to that, but I would suggest that you have to include food, you have to include energy, and you have to include shelter. But maybe we need to somewhat normalize, you know, those prices and have a look at, you know, quarterly changes instead of month-to-month changes.
Yeah.
But you have a look at the US. So Henry Hub, so gasoline futures are up just over 20% year to date.
Mm-hmm.
20% gasoline price increases, and we haven't even hit driving season.
It's not even summer season over there.
So
it's always puzzled me, driving season.
Yeah, there's no way anyone can tell you that inflation is down or is stabilizing when you've got to fill up your gas tank at 20% more.
Yeah.
So you can't take that out. You can't, if you ship anything via truck.
It has to, it impacts the actual price of you doing everything. It impacts margins on your business. It impacts all of the things that are downstream. Yeah. If you rip it out of there, it just makes me upset, which is why this is a great response here. Before we get onto the footy tips, Booko Capital is a great Twitter account, very funny. And do you remember it's all about writing. Remember that there's a Seinfeld scene where they're talking about writing things off? It's fantastic. But anyway, you just got to see it. There was something.
That's the US
excluding. Yeah, that's right. That's right. We're writing it off. There was something. We're going to let him exclude it. They just write it off. And it's just like, they exclude it?
Yeah.
It's exclusion. It's exclusion. It just excludes it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you even know how to do you all big economists exclude everything?
Yeah.
You don't even know how inflation's going. They're the ones excluding it. Yeah, that's a good one. Mate, you got any red hot tips for us this weekend?
Oh, look, I'm a diehard Parramatta fan, so
it's gonna be a tough game.
It's gonna be a long season. I feel like the season's already over.
That's a terrible way of behaving.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
For them, not for me.
Yeah.
They've got a lot of fans who are very disgruntled about, you know, their selections, their roster, and their passion for the game, and it's quite sad.
Really. I'm not going to lie. I raise children. We've got a very good sports, you know, a great sports sports athletes. One of them is a national athlete, national level athlete. The other one's a scholarship level dancer. I raised them to have a really good sporting ethic. Sportsmanship is very strong to us. I was, because I've chosen the Tigers this year to be my team. I'm not gonna lie, I was screaming at the TV for him to shank that kick that would have gotten the win the other day. That was, I was scared. Just like, Daddy, you okay? I was just like, I really wanted to miss this kick.
Yeah.
And the Tigers got up.
It's really interesting because just that game alone, you can see, I mean, as I said, I don't think the Parramatta roster is very good.
Yeah.
And the commentators on TV seem to be talking about these players if they're completely different players to actually how they're playing on the field.
Yeah.
But that game was an instance where they have a better team than the Tigers.
Yeah.
But the Tigers play with more enthusiasm, more passion.
It's right here.
And actually wanted to win.
It's right here. It's where
like,
it counts, man.
It's like the Parra team just walked on the field and went, all right, well, it's another game. Let's have a run and see how we go.
It's annoyingly, don't take the Tigers for granted.
So
don't take those Tigers for granted.
That's a good place now.
Well, we're supposed to have Robbie Farah call in. I think we might be trying to tack it onto the end of this podcast here. So I'll pretend like I'm just crossing to him now. But he was supposed to dial in. He's not going to. I've just got a message. He can't make it. But talking to him about this, like this, just this passion that there is of this belief that's coming out of the Tigers outfit now. I'm so proud of what they're doing.
Yeah.
Also, and I'm proud to be a supporter of theirs this year.
That's good.
Yeah. So I've got a big fat multi. Yeah. Melbourne Storm into Broncos, into Warriors, into the Sharks, into the Tigers. That Tigers game will be up in the air against St. George. That'll pay you about 5.5, 520.
Sounds reasonable.
Put it in the bank. Invest in Carrara Capital with all your money. This is not a gambling podcast. I always say bet with your head, not over it. Mate, thanks for joining us. Anything else to behave? No?
No, look, as I said, I'm a Parra fan, so NRL's over, but I'm also a Carlton fan, so... You know, what a season for the AFL.
That ball was touched, mate. I'm not a Freo fan, but that's a robbery. Someone captured that on his phone from the other side of the field, and they could see that it was deflected.
Look, you always need a slice of luck.
Yeah, I know. That's how you get to the big show.
But on back onto the investment side of things, I think it's a really interesting time. You know, I think we've got some really great opportunities around the world.
Yep.
And I think we're in a time when we've got some amazing technologies coming through. You know, we are in somewhat of a change in a technology revolution, whether it's AI or electrification.
Yep.
And the world is changing geopolitically. So I think it's a time when opportunities are enormous here, but risks are also elevated. And we need to be very conscious of how people manage capital and what risks they're taking, because we are seeing a world where when shocks do come, they come pretty quick and fast.
Yeah.
quick and sharp, and you got to be prepared for that. So it's not an easy environment, but it's a fantastic environment, I think.
I think I have to agree with you. I think that right now the opportunities that there are that exist in finding the companies that are adopting AI, definitely adopting tech. I mean, AI is the main piece of tech that's out there right now. There's some real opportunities that are still there. The tech boat on the invention of AI, that ship's pretty much sailed. Now it's about adoption and who's adopting the best.
Yeah, how do you implement that?
Yeah, and who's implementing it and where the savings are.
Yeah, that's going to be real key.
Yeah, and you go, okay, their margins are, I'm just going to make a number, 9%. With this, it's going to go to 10%. That's a huge difference.
Yeah.
That megaphone's into stock price returns. We've got a couple of tips, but it's not here for me to talk our book. It's here to you to talk your book. Okay, thank you very much for that, David Sikorski.
Thanks, James.
Of Carrara Capital. Chief Investment Officer. You have been watching and listening to the Theory of Thing Investment podcast. My name is James Whelan, Managing Director of Barclay Pearce Capital's Wealth Management Team. Not joined by Robbie Farah, but I suppose we'll figure that out later unless he's actually tacked on to the end of this one. And then good luck to Amit and congratulations on his engagement. He's engaged to be married. Our head of marketing was so proud of him. And anyway, that's that. Thanks very much, everyone. Have yourself a good one. Stay safe. Mark well. All right, despite everything I may have just said about him in the podcast there, we are joined by one of my favourite people on the planet. He has won, you know what, Enfield Federals Junior Rugby, Leichhardt Wanderers Junior Rugby League, played for Australia, played for Lebanon, captained the New South Wales Blues, New South Wales all the way through, won at least one premiership in 2005 for the Mighty Tigers. He's one of our own. Robbie Farah, how are you now? Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, mate. How you going?
Mate, fantastic. Just had a really good podcast just recorded then. I don't know when we're going to cut this in, so it was either before or after this one, but it did go quite well. So was it, mate? We're just going to do a quick blast through, and obviously the purpose of this is to talk about the winner of our tipping comp, the Barclay Pierce Capital tipping comp, which is going sensationally well. Got a lot of members, got a lot of people. We've got to give out some prizes for that one, so we'll get straight into that. I'm just going to make sure that I know who it is that I'm actually going to give a prize to. It's good. Mate, now let's just go through the season in your capacity as someone who knows what they're talking about. Mate, what teams have impressed or surprised you the most in the first month of NRL football, 2024?
Look, I think obviously the Dolphins being top of the ladder. They've started the year pretty well, although I think they've won some games against, without disrespecting anyone, a bit of lesser opposition. Some of the wins, they haven't played any of the real top eight teams from last year, I guess. So, they'll get challenged a bit more in the coming weeks. The Cowboys have been really strong with the ball. I think they've still struggled a little bit defensively, which will be a concern for Toddy Payton. But they've definitely got points in them, the Cowboys. You know, they've got some strike right across the park. So, they're going to threaten any team they play against.
Yeah, fantastic. I mean, the Dolphins have really been a standout. There's been a couple of individual performances on them. I'm struggling to find one. I mean, you got to think about maybe one player being sin-binned, absolutely turned the fortunes of the Dolphins around. If that's an individual player performance, that are difficult to describe exactly the impact that he's had not being on the field. But, mate, are there any other individual player performances that have caught your attention around the league?
I don't know. It's really off the top of my head, to be honest. But, I think James Tedesco, obviously he copped a bit of flack last year. You know, there were question marks over his form and, you know, people doubting if he was still on the top of his game, especially when it comes to rep footy. But I think he's proved, you know, in the early rounds this season that he's still one of the best fullbacks in the game. He's got a lot more footy left in him. Yeah, I think Luke Brooks as well. Luke Brooks at Manly, it's been good to see Luke Brooksy go well. Obviously, a lot of pressure when he's at the Tigers, copped a lot of flack, but looks to be playing a lot freer over at Manly and enjoying his footy, which is really good to see.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously not giving too much away, but any of your own crew that we should be keeping an eye on, ready for superstar performances?
Everyone's seen Lockie Galvin make his debut, and as an 18-year-old kid, he's been quite impressive. Had a really good preseason. And if you're good enough, you're old enough. So we were more than confident in giving him his first start. And I think for us, Stefano Oitukamanu in the front row, he's destined for great things, you know, over the next few years. He's really leading from the front and playing some great footy. And I think, you know, when you're talking Origins just around the corner, I think he'd be one of the first names picked at the moment.
Oh, put the lean on that one, mate, Robbie. That's a good one. Lastly, your thoughts, one of your old teams, the Rabbitohs. I think you played two seasons there. As much as I despise the Rabbitohs, I'll accept it because you were there. Do you reckon they can get it back together and get themselves back on some sort of winning performance?
They can. They've got, you know, quality players through their side. You know, when you talk about Jack Wyden and Cody Walker, Cam Murray, you know, Damien Cook's been dropped this week, but he's still a quality player. You know, Latrell has had his ups and downs, but, you know, when Latrell's on, he can make a big difference to their team. So, look, they can. There's obviously going to take a lot of work to turn it around. It looks like there's a few dramas there at the moment, but never write them off.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the rugby league world is waiting for Latrell to just switch it on. And when he does, it's going to be sensational. Now, we've got a winner here, mate. So I'm just going to tell you, we've had the first four rounds of the NRL tipping comps brought to you by Barclay Pierce Capital. And outstandingly, and we thought there was actually sort of someone who's some sort of a tipping savant. It was the Green Machine, or the Green Mosh, it actually says here, who tipped the first two rounds with perfect nine points, got 7 points in the third round, four, only 4 points, but managed to secure the victory for that particular person. Congratulations to the Green Machine, I believe that is, who was followed by Daylight and then followed by JB out there. So thanks very much. Big prize coming out your way. I believe it's about a $250 voucher on the way. So congratulations to you. And thank you, everyone else, for going. We're going to do this every 4 weeks to stay involved, and we reset it as we go. So there's always going to be something for everyone out there. Robbie Farah, one of my heroes and a good mate of mine and the firm as well. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, James. Appreciate it, mate.
Have yourself a good day. Stay safe and good luck over the weekend. James Whelan, Managing Director, Barclay Pierce Capital's Wealth Management Team. Thank you for joining us for that little update on what's ahead.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.